Hey, let's start this again. Welcome to the Nerded Legion podcast, Nick Wetmore. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Thanks, Julian. Thanks for welcoming us back. We appreciate being back. It's nice to do whatever this is. Hello.
The director of ceremonies, Julian Ferretti.
Yes, the MC of C's.
The MC Ren.
MC MCP Pants.
Ooh.
Did you ever watch, what show was that? Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Never seen a minute of it.
Oh my God, you're missing out. Aqua Teen Hunger Force, yeah. They had an episode called MCP Pants, where Meatwad became obsessed with this rapper named MCP Pants. Mm-hmm. And Meatwad is a giant wad of ground beef, by the way.
Oh, jeez.
Who can talk. And he has arms and a face.
Okay.
And he becomes obsessed with this rapper, and one of his roommates, Frylock, who is a container of French fries with a mustache, tries to convince him that it's a bad idea because it's rotting his brain. And Meatwad finds a friend. I can't remember who it was. It might have been the other guy that lives with him. The milkshake. What's his name? Master Shake. He's a milkshake cup. And he convinces him to go see MCP Pants because in one of MCP Pants' songs, he gives like an address for where to meet MCP Pants. And so they go to meet MCP Pants, and it turns out that MCP Pants is a giant spider alien that is putting out this music to entice kids to come to this warehouse so he can eat them.
Wow.
Yes, MCP Pants. Which actually, MCP Pants was like an actual rapper. I wish I remember the guy's name.
Hilarious.
And they like hired him to be on this thing.
Wow.
Yeah. MCP Pants. Fantastic episode. 5 stars.
Was it Dr. Octagon?
Was it?
I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm not looking up. I'm throwing it out because the time frame might line up pretty well.
Mm. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised that it were Octagon. He always had personality changes.
Mm-hmm. Sure did. Name changes and personality changes.
Yes, name and personality changes.
Mm-hmm.
So, we shall see. Oh, that's right. Julian says MCP Pants also reincarnates into different forms when you kill him. Yes, this is true.
Wow, I love having Julian on the sidelines. That's awesome.
Julian could be like the show producer.
Yes.
Show producer. There's a podcast that I listen to, The Brothers of the Serpent, and they have a guy that comes on who you never see his video, and they call him the Watcher. And he just like corrects them when they say stupid shit on the podcast.
The all-knowing eye. I like it. I like it a lot. We need that because it's like, oh my God, if we did corrections and had listeners send in like, guys, you were wrong when you mentioned blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, I get it. We're not a factual podcast here every once in a while. We get things wrong. We're not doing research. It's not, you know, what the hell's that? What was that one? God, I'm trying to think. It was like a public radio murder mystery thing.
Hmm.
It was a big one.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I know your wife would know. But like that is well researched and factual.
It sounded
Nerdy
like
Legion, not so much.
It sounded like a town from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Ooh. Hellmouth?
No. Somethingville. But it's, you know. Like, I don't know. Fangville. I don't know. I just made that up.
Interesting.
How's your Buffy watching going?
Buddy, we haven't even started it
yet.
Oh,
man. You got me intrigued. I told my wife she needs to give me her Hulu information so I can start watching. I said, can you give me your Hulu information? She's like, yeah, what are you going to watch? I said, Buffy. She said, Buffy? I said, yeah, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. She said, with Sarah Michelle Gellar? I said, yeah.
That Buffy?
She's like, why do you want to watch that? I said, because it's the best show ever. Duh.
It was pretty darn entertaining back in the day.
It was good. It was good. So we'll see. Yeah, I haven't started it yet, though.
We just never got around to it. Like yesterday, we had a lot of deliveries that we had to take care of. And then I don't know what happened, but like the entire day, all of a sudden we looked up and it was 8 o'clock at night, and she's like, you want to start it? And I'm like, let's watch some, because I had a couple Howard Stern interviews I wanted to watch. Mm. So I'm like, let's watch those. So all of a sudden that day went, and then today, God, I forget what the hell happened. She was a little down because of her dad being Father's Day.
Ah.
So I'm like, you want to do Buffy or King of Staten Island? And she was just like, oh, I don't know. Why don't we watch a couple YouTube videos? And then like 4 hours later, it's like, oh, I got to go record Nerdy Legion. All right. Talk to you later.
Yeah. I started going through my Netflix queue today. Nice. First time I've done that in many an eon.
Are you letting things go or looking through the new stuff and just keep adding on stuff?
No, I'm trying to clear my queue, which will never happen.
Right.
Because I have stuff on there from years ago.
Yeah.
But I was like, you know what? Let me just start, and I'll start watching movies off my queue. Mm. Mm. Right, so I can clear some stuff out. And then sure. I noticed that like there's stuff on my queue that I've already seen and rated, but I never took off my queue. Oh. So I started taking stuff off my queue first.
That had to be good.
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice. Yeah. And then I watched a couple things. I watched a movie.
Okay.
And I watched a documentary.
Oh, sweet Jesus. Go ahead.
All right. Let's start with a documentary.
Yes, please.
The documentary that I watched, we may have talked about before. I don't remember.
Okay.
Called The Great Hack. Have you heard of it?
Maybe. That sounds familiar.
All right. This documentary made me slightly upset.
Uh-oh.
The Great Hack. It's based on the Cambridge Analytica thing from a few years ago with Facebook.
Uh-huh.
And basically, like, the story of how Cambridge Analytica went bankrupt and, like, basically dissolved. And you get it from, like, the beginning when you had the first whistleblower from Cambridge Analytica, which didn't even come about from, like, he was pissed off about what he was doing. There was a guy that somehow noticed that this company was harvesting voter data. And so he sent them an email. He's like, hey, I'm a voter in the U.S. and I understand you guys have voter data. Can you like share what data you have on me? And they basically told him to piss off. So he hired lawyers in the U.K. to try to get an injunction for him to get his personal data to see what they knew about him.
Nice.
And so, of course, when this comes out, like, newspapers start writing articles, like, people get interested. He starts doing, like, the talk circuit. Governments start getting involved. And then, like, people that used to work for Cambridge Analytica start speaking out about, like, the stuff that they did. And, like, it keeps going and going and going. Then you get, like, the big whistleblower, which is this woman that worked there, who used to work for, like, the Obama campaign as just, like, a volunteer.
Hmm.
And somehow became involved in this company. And, like, she was the person that managed to set up a lot of their big deals. Like, for example, the Trump campaign. Hmm. So while it doesn't, like, focus on the Trump campaign, they do bring it up. And it kind of ends, like, during the Mueller investigation.
Ooh.
Because she got subpoenaed by them to see, like, what she knew about Julian Assange and all this stuff, right? Because that's when the whole Clinton emails thing was big.
Yeah, cast a wide net and hope you get something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it was awesome. Like, it was really well done. And a lot of the stuff was done in real time. So they must have filmed it over the course of a few years.
Hmm.
And, you know, they had, like, undercover meetings with, like, the CEO of Cambridge Analytica in which he talks about meeting with Trump and, like, all these other governments to, like, rig elections, basically, through social media.
Wow.
They talk about, like, some of the bad aspects of the whole thing, like the racial genocide in Myanmar, which was caused quite literally by WhatsApp with the help of Cambridge Analytica.
Wow.
Yeah, like, going back, you know, like, 10 or 15 years. Matter of fact, it might have been longer because I think one of the earliest examples they had on there was the Mandela election, which would have been like in the 90s. Is that right?
Dang.
I don't remember. Something like that. But I remember he was on there. This whole debacle, apparently, like, I was not aware of this. Apparently in Trinidad and Tobago, there's like a large black population and a large Indian population, like Indian from India. And like, basically, the two political parties there are, like, Black People Party and the Indian People Party. and they use like all this racial tension to get this particular candidate elected. And so, it, of course, like it starts hinting at some things. I mean, it couldn't do the stuff we're going on through now because the film's been out for like a year. Maybe less than that. It came out last year. I know that. But like some of the stuff that they show on there is just crazy, like how easily manipulated people are just by like showing them certain images or like creating this catchy catchphrase like lock her up, right? And then making like the two O's and crooked look like handcuffs. All that stuff was done by Cambridge Analytica. And it had my mind flowing about certain things. You know what I mean? You see a lot of the stuff nowadays, and like everyone blames Russia, but here's this company based out of the UK that basically like started this whole thing.
I like it. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I got to check that out. Two questions. Did the movie end satisfactory for you? Hmm. And did the movie end satisfactory for the guy who subpoenaed? Does his story arc wrap up? Does he get to know all of the information that they have, voter information that they have on him at the end of the film?
Nope.
Or is it just sort of left in limbo?
Well, basically, Cambridge Analytica pleads guilty to taking his information. Mm-hmm. But Cambridge Analytica goes bankrupt and the company dissolves. So
F that. How convenient.
So there's no one to share that information with anymore.
Jesus H. Christ.
And then like the whistleblower, like basically she continues a similar movement with like the own your data movement, having like Silicon Valley companies try to be more transparent in how they use and share your personal data.
Sure.
Yeah, but it was wow. It was interesting, and it follows a couple of reporters that followed the whole case throughout, you know, all the years that it was around. It was well done. It's well done. Not for everybody, I get that.
But yeah, it sounds fascinating,
though. Yeah, it was really well done. You should check it out. The Great Hack.
I would like to. I will put that in my queue.
Mm-hmm. And then the movie that I watched, you know, I love Korean movies.
Yes.
Korean movies are my new jam. So I found this Korean movie on my queue that just like keeps popping up in my face. So I don't know if it's like popular or if Cambridge Analytica just wants to sell me this movie. But I was like, you know what? It's in my queue. I'm going to watch it. The correct pronunciation in Korean, I think, is Sabana, the sixth finger. It's spelled S-V-A-N-A. And basically that term, Sabana, is kind of like the Hindu or Buddhist version of Amen, kind of. So I don't know what to think about this movie at first, right? Because I knew the term, and I knew what the subtitle meant, the sixth finger.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know how like the two would be connected when I start watching this movie.
Oh.
Because when the movie starts, I thought it's going to be like The Ring, right? Because when the movie starts... It's this girl narrating, and she's talking about when she was born, she had a twin, and like her twin was born first, and she was a demon, and like her mom died a week after childbirth, and then like her dad committed suicide like a couple months after, and so she was raised by her grandparents, and you know the story around town was that her twin died. And the thing is, like, her grandparents never registered her as a live birth because she was a demon, basically. So they just, like, raise her in a closet, right? Like, they don't want to kill her because that's their granddaughter.
Right.
But she's a demon.
Wow.
Okay? So, you know, she's got the ring thing with the face over her hair and, like, she's got hair on her hands. Like, she looks super sketchy. And we know that they move a lot from town to town. And so they show them, like, they had just moved to this one town, and they raised dogs. And apparently when they had moved into this one town, all the cattle from this one ranch started dying. So you get the scene of this, like, native Korean shaman woman doing this, like, chanting and dancing with swords. And, like, they're doing this whole ritual to try to save the cows. And, like, the last cow dies, right? So they want to see like what's going on with this family. Like there's some weird crap, right? Because they move in and like all the animals start to die. So you keep getting this like Ring vibe, right? It's not at all. It's not at all that.
Right.
Because then it cuts to this guy who's a pastor, and he's giving a lecture at this school about, I think it's like about Christian cults. And this is when you start getting like a hint of it. Let me tell you, Rob Krieger, if you're listening to this, you will like this movie, my friend.
He will not give it a 7 out of 10?
He might give it a 7 out of 10. I don't know.
Okay.
That's his favorite rating. It's the only number he knows. It's true.
Lies.
No, I've seen it. Every time I see his, when he rates a movie on Twitter, it's like 7 out of 10. I'm like, come on, Rob. Make up your mind, bro.
Phantom of the Opera from 1943 is not 7 out of 10. Come on.
I don't know. I missed that one. But every other one that I see is 7 out of 10.
Okay.
So so you meet this guy, right? And you're like, okay, like there's something else going on here. Mm-hmm. And you very quickly learn that he's like a con artist, okay? He is a pastor of some kind. We never learn what kind. But he goes by Pastor whatever his name is. I can't remember. So everyone calls him Pastor. But basically, like, what he does is, like, debunk social movements and, like, specific cults and offshoots of, like, mainstream religion. So we learned that, like, he's been writing articles to, like, disprove some convent for the Catholic Church. And, like, the nuns are all pissed off, so they're, like, outside his office, like, protesting. And they egg the crap out of him when he comes to the office at one point. And like, this is what he does. Like, he gets hired by like the Catholic Church or like an Episcopalian group to discredit a different group.
Sure.
And so he takes notice of this cult like Deer Hill, that appears to be Buddhist. Okay. And so he's like, oh, the Buddhists pay a lot of money. So I need to get involved in this Buddhist cult and see what's going on. Right, because like
for all the most noble reasons, yeah. Dang, they'll pay a lot of money. They got deep pockets. Good.
They got deep pockets,
right?
And so he goes to like the main Buddhist monastery in Korea and talks to the people that run it. And the main guy, Octopus is his name. He's like, this just seems like people just worshiping the Buddha in a slightly different way. I don't see the big deal. But one of the other main monks kind of like entices him to keep researching it. So it goes like really deep into like belief and like what is and isn't like an acceptable form of belief and like the extent that established, I guess, religions go to like discredit other groups, like competing groups, right? So like he even has one of his guys like become a spy. Like he joins this cult to like see what it is. Right. And he wants to know like if they have a scripture that they follow, that's not like the canonical scriptures. And like, if there's anything weird about it, because he notices that like when they pray, they don't pray to Buddha, they pray to a general. Right. Yeah. And so he finds that a little weird. So researching into this, he does find out that there's like, well, he finds, I think, two different like, quote unquote churches for this Deer Hill cult. And notices that in the background, in the little prayer room that they have these like giant paintings of these evil gods that were like Buddha's protectors, basically, right? The four heavenly kings. And going through this, there's like this whole conspiracy involving Buddhism where like there used to be this guy who was a Buddhist, like he was named like top Buddhist of the year, you know what I mean? Or whatever.
Got a whole plaque and everything.
Yeah, yeah. And like even through like the official Tibetan Buddhists, right? Which would be like the more mainstream, I guess, or one of the bigger aspects. And he finds out that like this guy became kind of discontented with Buddhism and created this offshoot. I can't remember the name of it. And somehow one year he just like dissolved the cult. Like it didn't exist anymore and he disappeared.
Huh.
Right. So as all this is happening, there's like murders going on. And you learn, finally, you start to learn like how it is that this girl and her demon twin tie into the plot. Because as it turns out, when the guy dissolved the cult and disappeared, he didn't die or anything. And like he was old, right? Because he was born in 1899. And these girls, these twins, were born in 1999. What had happened was he disappeared and like somehow attained full Buddhahood, right? So he became immortal. But he had these prophecies, and he created a new sutra, a new book. And in this book, it was kind of like the apocalypse kind of thing, right? Kind of like an apocalyptic religion.
Okay.
Based on these visions that he had. And it was all so
like a predicting of the apocalypse.
Yeah, something like that.
Gotcha.
And it was all encoded in this Buddhist language. So it talked about like the four heavenly kings and like their worshippers and how they tied into Buddha. And there was all this like numerology in the text, and the number 81 kept on coming up. So like through doing research between himself and like this other Buddhist monk that wanted him to keep researching this cult. And funny enough, Dr. Goog, which is suggested by his secretary, which is just Google, right? She's like, yeah, ask Dr. Goog. And he's like, what's Dr. Goog? She's like, Google, just go on Google and look up this guy's name. So I thought that was kind of, because, you know, Korean movies always have like a little bit of humor.
Sure.
So there were a couple bits of humor, not much throughout this movie. For the most part, it's very serious. And he starts learning all this stuff. And so as it turns out, this guy, when he disappeared, had these visions. He saw that there was going to be some like epic struggle between good and evil. And the figure that was going to kind of cause this apocalypse to happen was a girl born in this particular town. I think it was actually the same town he was born in. Born in this particular town in this year, right? And so what he had done is he had actually gone to like a boys' reform school that brought in like teenage delinquents, basically, and somehow like fostered these four kids to believe in this vision that he had. And so they had become his four generals in real life, right? So like he was the Buddha, and then these four criminal delinquents were the generals. And he used them, he kind of like brainwashed them to go after all the girls born in this town in 1999 and kill them.
That's how they're roping it back in.
Correct. So now,
at this point, I don't even need the evil twin. Like the story you just gave me sounds pretty fascinating.
Yes. Julian says there's a Julian must have seen it. He said there's a picture of him smiling on the wall with a thumbs up at the temple entrance. Yeah, I didn't catch that. I might have to watch it again now.
All right.
So these guys have been traveling all around the world, basically killing girls born in this town in 99. And actually one of the guys had gone to Canada because one of the families had moved to Canada and he killed the family there and then committed suicide in prison. Because like he might brainwashed them to believe that they're like the horsemen of the apocalypse, basically. Right.
Yeah.
And there's only one guy left. And so we kind of follow along with this guy. And like there has to be some kind of like more than just psychological trauma, because a lot of times we see this guy and he's housed up in one of the temples, right, for Deer Hill. And because they protect him, right? He's like the horseman, so they have to protect him because he's got a mission to accomplish. But every time you see him in one of these temples, like when he falls asleep, he has visions of all the girls he killed. And that's when it gets kind of ringy, because they're like climbing down from like the ceiling, right, down the walls, and like about to gnaw at him. And he sees like his dead mom, who was a prostitute, kind of like singing to him and holding him in her arms and protecting him from the evil spirits.
Interesting.
So there's a lot of twists and turns. Like once you start getting the idea of what's happening, there's a lot of twists and turns. And there's a really big twist towards the end. And I'll go ahead and tell you, because I know you're not going to watch it. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to watch it, cover your ears for 30 seconds. The guy goes to get this girl, right? Because she has a registered birth certificate. He goes to find her. He kidnaps her. Somehow he can't kill her, right? So he like leaves her tied up in the woods somewhere. But while this is happening, she tells him that she has a twin sister that was never like registered with the government. And so he's like, this must be the girl. So he goes to find the twin sister. And by this point, like, things have changed a little bit with the twin. You see at one scene where she's like gnawing at dirt and like the nastiness, like the scaly skin and the hairy palms and all that. It's just like peeling off of her.
Wow.
And so like he goes there to see what's going on with her and kill her. And she's just like sitting in the back of the room. And as he gets closer, he realizes that she is a Buddha, right? Because one of the themes in this whole thing is the Maitreya, which is the future Buddha, right? That was prophesized. And So he's like, well, I'm confused. Like, I thought my master was the Maitreya, but here's this little girl who seems like she might be the Maitreya. And part of the reason that it's called the subtitle of the movie is The Sixth Finger is because the Buddha has six fingers on each hand, right? It's like a sign of enlightenment. And so the little girl, like, super freaky, right? Because now she looks like a Buddha, so she's bald, and she like, sitting in meditation, and she's doing mudras as she's talking to him. She basically tells them, like, I'm not the snake. Your master's a snake. She's like, look at his hands. Look at his hands. And so he goes to see his master and raises up the sheets because the master's, you know, 116 years old at this point. He's, like, on life support. And he goes to raise the sheets that are covering him, and he sees that his hands only have five fingers. So now he's like really confused. He's like, well, he can't be a Buddha if he only has five fingers. And at the same time that he has this revelation, this pastor guy we've been following the whole movie also realizes that this guy can't be a Buddha because if he were, he would be immortal and he wouldn't be on life support.
Right.
So you get one of the big final reveals in that you learn that the guy that's the master's keeper, the guy that like basically nurses him every day, is actually the guy, right? So So the guy that's on life support has just been playing the role of being the master since like the 40s.
And the caretaker that's been taking care of him is the actual guy.
And the caretaker is actually the guy, right? He achieved Buddhahood in the 40s. And so he has not aged since then.
Wow. That's interesting. That's a good twist.
Yeah. So the master goes to find the girl and kill her himself. But then along the way, there's an altercation with him and the pastor. And then with his disciple finds him. And you get this whole prophecy that the little evil demon twin girl gave him as to how to defeat the real snake. And so basically, he burns him alive.
Does Eddie Murphy in a beanie ever come in with a young Asian child? Does that ever happen? What? No.
You know, I haven't seen that movie since I was like 8 years old.
But now, do you want to go see The Golden Child, or would you rather like to see, what is it called? The Last Dragon? Remember that Bruce Lee movie?
Oh, I thought you
came out right around the same time that like had all these like crazy special effects, thinking that like Bruce Lee's enlightened. Look at him! Oh, like come on.
See, I thought you were gonna go with the other Last Dragon with Bruce Leroy.
Heck yeah!
And what was the guy's name? The bad guy?
I don't recall.
Oh man,
Bruce Leroy.
Shownuff. That was his name. Shownuff.
There we go.
Yeah.
Bruce so there Leroy was no golden child?
There was no golden child. And actually, when the master dies, the little demon child that has become a Buddha also dies.
I thought you were going to say, since they're 1,000-year difference or 100-year difference, I thought you were going to say that they were related, the twins to the old dude.
Mm.
That's where I thought you were going, since it's so perfect that they were in the same village, exactly 100 years apart, that type of thing.
That could have been interesting.
It sounds really good, though. Whatever happened to the guy who was doing all the hoaxy stuff?
Well, he figures out the truth, and he goes to try to help the disciple like stop this guy.
Is he redeemed at the end, or does he get his comeuppance?
They don't like specifically say what happens to him, but he does kind of ride off with the guy that he was using to spy on that cult. And okay. And it seems like from the things that he says that like he's going to change a little bit.
Gotcha, gotcha.
Julian says the Shogun of Harlem is my hero. Yes, Shonuf was the man.
There you go.
Shonuf. That's I think that's Aaron Bell's favorite movie of all time.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Bruce Leroy. But yeah, so Savannah, the Six Finger. Very good.
Sounds really good.
Very good. It's
that's
very
on
deep.
Netflix?
Yeah, it's on it's a Netflix original.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see the trailer for One Child Nation? It's an Amazon original.
No. This sounds like a China thing.
It is. It absolutely is. It is a documentary on exactly that, the political case of China, the Chinese government demanding that each family only has one child.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, this 2-minute and 9-second trailer, dude, I got like goose chills up the neck. It was, and I even, you know, I knew a little bit about this. My wife had no clue about it. And mm-hmm. she was like, this is like a horror film. This is terrifying.
I don't think we have Chinese listeners, so I will say that China sounds like a horror show.
It's just scary to think of all of these like different scenarios that parents had to go through to hide children, to get them adopted outside in the black market, just so they wouldn't have to kill a child, or the older generation going and like killing their kid's kid because it was their duty. It's just like, oh my God, like so many tangential, like, how can people do that? It's like, it was frightening to think of. And this is just sort of semi-related. I'm listening to a Sean Penn interview with Stern, and Sean Penn is doing this like COVID, trying to get like COVID testing out to like sort of what he did with like all these malnourished countries. He would go into and try to like build like infrastructure in Haiti and try to help them that way. He's taking that same business model and trying to get that to happen in cities across the U.S. trying to get like COVID testing done, which, hey, kudos to him. Our government can't get this stuff together. Yeah. Let's rely on a 2-time Academy Award winning actor. That makes sense, but whatever. But he's talking about like, and he never really places blame on like the government or anything. He was pretty down the middle, trying to like be pretty political throughout the entire like 2-hour interview, whether you like Sean Penn or not, whatever, here nor there. But he brought up a point which sort of harkens back to One Child Nation. He goes, even if our government can't get that together, you would think that the government would be able to find money to be able to help all these people that sign up to be doctors and nurses and custodians in hospitals, yet when families can't go in to like hold the hand of a person that's dying in a hospital because of COVID, like that falls on a nurse, that falls on a doctor or an orderly to step up and do stuff like that. And his point is, you know how much like mental health that will be needed in the next like decade or two for those workers, as well as family members that can't go and say goodbye to people. I mean, last Sunday I was late recording because I was part of a Zoom funeral.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because I couldn't be there in person. So I had to sit there on Zoom and watch a priest say goodbye to someone in, you know, a funeral home because this couldn't happen in a church currently. They couldn't hold a funeral there. So they did it in the funeral home. And it was shocked. Like, that was a moment where it's like, you think of all these ramifications that's happening currently right now. And I never even thought about like, oh my God, like how can doctors, nurses, orderlies, people that are in that hospital, how can they be, or EMT people, how can they be able to handle months and months and months of this going on? And it was shocking. Like, I'm like, mother effing Sean Penn. Are you fucking kidding? Like, whether you like him or not, it's like, that was a light bulb moment. And it's like, shoot, that's, and he even said, that's really what government officials should be talking about. Like, how can we help people 6 months from now, a year from now? Like, sure, maybe you can't organize things in 2 weeks, 2 months to be able to like dump tons of money to like try to get this under control within our borders. But you should have the forethought to be thinking. And even he said, he goes, there is no John Kennedy saying in 10 years, we're going to be on the moon. He goes,
I mean, Trump wants us on the moon right now.
Exactly. Exactly.
Trump's part. I mean, the moon's part of Mars. Don't you know we're going there right now?
It's just frightening. And it's like, wow, you're pretty like, yeah, that's pretty succinct. What's happening? Like we have a government that's only looking at like 2 weeks from now, a month from now. Like, they're not looking years in advance. They're worried about November, everyone getting reelected and stuff. That's what they're worried about.
Look, I don't know if I necessarily agree, Nick. Is this going to be the hot take episode? Welcome to take with Nick and Martin.
It does not have to be. My point is, all I want you to do is go watch that one Child Nation trailer, because I know that's going to be, I think that's already on Netflix. It might be, or it's coming soon. But that looks really good. That looks really good. And then I saw another trailer for an Amazon original that's did you see the Joseph Gordon-Levitt trailer?
Which one's that?
Where he's the pilot and...
Yes.
There's a camera outside of the cockpit.
Yep.
And there's, I guess, terrorists, would you say? Terrorists trying to hijack the airplane.
Yep.
I was like, at the end of that trailer, when they grab a hostage and like pistol whip her in front of this camera, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt just has to sit there and stare at the camera, helpless. I'm like, oh my God, this is insane. Oh my God. It seems so tense. And like, I wouldn't know what to do. Holy Christ. That frightening trailer. Oh my gosh. And I like Joseph Gordon-Levitt, so I might have to watch that, damn it.
Yeah, that's a Netflix original, right?
Yeah. I think it's streaming in like July or something.
Yeah. Yeah, that looks good. I saw that. So One Child Nation has a 98% tomato meter and an 85% audience score.
Yeah, I can see that.
I'm going to watch that. It looks good. Here's the thing. As we learn from these coronavirus bailouts, Nick, money is infinite. And yes, and appears out of nowhere. Just out of a magic hat. All you got to do is print it, and there it is.
Yeah, just send people another refund check, and everything will be okay.
I still haven't gotten mine. My in-laws have not either. No, it's true. It's true. Money comes out of nowhere because it doesn't exist. And so therefore, this kind of thing happens. When they tell you that there is no money, it's all a lie. There's plenty of money. There are plenty of resources. We choose to purposely... make this thing scarce. That way it has some kind of value.
You could fold money that is going in one direction to a different direction.
See, Julian agrees. Tough. Julian says, money doesn't exist. It hasn't existed for decades. Correct. Where's my bell?
When will change not exist? Because I hate carrying around all that dirty change.
So funny that you say that. I saw an article like 2 days ago where banks are not giving businesses change in their change orders because they're not receiving any from the Federal Reserve.
Wow.
Because apparently there's no change being circulated. This is the rationale. The Federal Reserve says that there is no change being circulated because a lot of businesses are closed, and so there's just not that much to go around. Funny thing, though. If you're a business and you go to a bank to get change, they will tell you that every week they receive a giant box of cash from the Federal Reserve.
Well, they can't, because the Federal Reserve said that that's not happening.
Well, I think it's a lie.
Why would they be saying that? I don't understand. Oh my god, so stupid.
Anyways, Nick, they're lying to you. If you want to learn more about that, you can listen to my other podcast, The Alchemical Mind, in which I just did a 3-part series on this exact thing.
Nice.
I did an episode on authority. I did an episode on authority and religion. And then today I put out an episode with a friend of the show, DJ Briggs from the Bright Side Chat, in which we talked about the movie The Matrix. And we dove into some awesome topics.
Sounds great.
In relation to that.
Did you talk about propeller heads or the Dust Brothers?
We did not.
Dang it. Come on.
Oh, DJ. Dennis is in the chat. He said maybe it's the same box being passed around. Maybe. Listen, money's fake. Get over it. We should just all have fake Bitcoin. It's the same thing. That's what I say.
I like
Watch Out Nation, though. I like it. I'm going to check this out. You said it's an Amazon original?
Yeah.
What was that? Is that a Netflix or Amazon? There's a new movie with Andy Samberg called Palm Springs.
Oh, dude. Nope. You are wrong. That is a Hulu original. That comes out late July.
I thought it looked good.
Dude. And I even looked at the wife and I'm like, you know what I like? Ivan Reitman. You know what I like? Bill Murray. You know what I like? Groundhog Day. And it's been 30 years since that's happened. So bring on Adam Sandler. Oh my God. That looks so good.
Yeah. It looks pretty, like a really fresh take on Groundhog Day too.
Especially roping in a whole new person to do the same damn thing with him.
Well, not just one, because wasn't there a third person at the wedding that lives the same day over and over too?
I don't think so. I think it's just him and the girl.
No. And it was like a famous actor too. I was like,
No, not J. Jonah Jameson.
J. Jonah Jameson, yes, him.
No, I think he just mentions... Like, oh, you know, John has such and such in his pocket. And then he went up and grabbed it out of his pocket, knowing who the hell cares. I'm going to do this.
I don't know, man. I think he's also stuck in Groundhog Day.
Hey, bring the more people in Groundhog Day, the better. Because that looks freaking hilarious.
It looks really good. I don't know about hilarious. It definitely looks funny. But it's what's the guy from The Office? What's his name?
Steve Carell.
You know, like Steve Carell after The Office was doing all those movies, and a lot of them were like super sad and depressing.
Yeah.
But they had some humor in it because he's a comedian. It kind of feels like that. We're like, it's kind of like a feel-good movie with some depressing stuff, but also comedy because the two main people are comedians.
That's sort of Groundhog Day.
That's true.
Yeah, there was a poignant bit to it, but still.
Yeah, that's true. I'm glad you like that, yeah.
I love her. Yeah, I just saw it today. I'm so happy you brought it up. I love her swerving into an oncoming semi, and he's like, see you tomorrow. Just like, what? Been there, done that.
Yep. It reminds me of, did you ever see, oh man, what's the name of that movie? The Tom Cruise movie with old Hottie McHottie face. Live, Die, Repeat. Yeah, the one that's based on, isn't it like based on a Philip K. Dick novel where it's like in the future and they're fighting aliens?
You mean like, wasn't it like Edge of Tomorrow?
Well, originally it was called Edge of Tomorrow, but they've renamed the movie. Edge of Tomorrow is now the subtitle. Yes. I don't know if this is like a Mandela effect thing.
Is this Mandela effect?
I don't know if it's a Mandela effect thing, but right now the official name of the movie is Live, Die, Repeat, : Edge of Tomorrow.
Really? With Emily Blunt? Right?
Emily Blunt's
in it?
Hello!
Yes. But that's the movie, right? Because I love me some Tom Cruise, as we've mentioned many times on this podcast.
Yeah, he's also in the movie. Emily Blunt. There you go.
Yeah.
Yes, Dennis and Julian both said Edge of Tomorrow. See, I like having this chat. We get corrected in real time. We need to do this more often.
It's nice.
But that's how it is. Remember? Because like, he just like kills himself on purpose sometimes to see what's going to happen and then goes back, and now he knows how to fix it.
Right.
That's how Palm Springs is.
Efficiently go after the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
That's so good. I should go watch that again.
Oh, man. It's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a while. I watched The Dark Knight Rises today. It was good.
What inspired that?
Zoe had never seen it.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, we got to watch it now.
Now we're on. Happy Father's Day to me.
Yeah, hello. Yes. You know what we should do, Nick? We should do our hot take topic of the week.
Our hot take topic of the week.
This was your idea.
Oh, okay, sure. I didn't know. Okay, yeah.
You want to introduce our hot topic of the week?
Sure. You caught me.
Were you not prepared? Did you not bring your notes with you?
I didn't bring my notes. No, my hot topic that I wanted to throw out to Martin. I know how much Martin loves homework. So, of course, I texted him. I said, "Do you want homework for next week?" And shockingly, he said, "Absolutely."
Absolutely. Julian says Edge of Tomorrow is a Japanese graphic novel.
Ooh, Julian. Now I might have to get that. All right, I'll hunt that down.
Mm-hmm.
Is the Japanese graphic novel based on Philip K. Dick?
Nope. I probably just made that up.
Dang it. Okay. Well, I asked Martin if he wanted homework. He said, absolutely. And because I've been catching this on Twitter here and there. And I've been catching the hashtag unpopular opinion. And I threw out to Martin, hey, why don't we have an unpopular opinion be one of our segments?
Mm-hmm.
My unpopular opinion is about two artists.
Mm.
And I could either combine them both into one, or I can give each name separately and we can ping pong back and forth.
All right. I'm going to assume that this hot take is that John Romita Jr. is hot garbage, in which case I will say, where's my bell?
Wait, hold on. I think you just froze up again. I didn't hear what you just... I lost you right after a hot take. What? What's going on?
I've got a hot take. It was instant for me. That's why I agreed to do this.
All right, give me your unpopular opinion.
No, I want to hear yours. You already started setting yours up.
Did you want me to do both or do one at a time?
Listen, it's your show.
I'll do one at a time. All right. It's my show. One at a time. My first hot take, my first unpopular opinion, I discovered this last year, and it has only been confirmed with this year. Last year, my adopted character, Superman. This year, it's Batman,
mm-hmm.
is my adopted character. Both times, this artist has been on both books. And every time I come across one of his issues, and you know me, I can go back and I can read Golden Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age. I have no problem doing that. I don't know what it is about his style. I don't know what it is. I do know what it is. For me, I would use the term loose and messy to describe why I don't care for the artwork. Maybe it's great.
This is John Romita Jr., isn't it?
No, not at all. It's Carmine Infantino.
Oh, well, that is a hot take. Go on.
That is an unpopular opinion. I realize this. There are plenty of books that Carmine Infantino is spotlighted in. I get it. But every time I see his stuff, it's just like, and hey, could it be, hey, have I ever read an original comic book from prime Infantino years and flip through it? No, I'm reading it guided view and it's digital. So maybe that messes it up because it's blown up way out of proportion into my eyeballs where I can see how loose and messy the artwork is for me.
Send all hate mail to
Who's Paul at nerdylegion.com. He'll never hear this. But honestly, I think it's that. I think it's guided view is giving me each panel way too big.
Yep, I agree.
You can pick apart stuff. Like, you look at Sienkiewicz's artwork on the page, but if you were going to go panel by panel, it blows things way out of perspective. And that could be the issue. That absolutely could be the issue. But I'm telling you, and my next Tales of Batman is completely a collection of Carmine Infantino issues of Batman.
So Dennis says, scratchy? Maybe it doesn't translate to digital. I'm going to have to agree.
I wouldn't say scratchy. I would say messy. Ooh. It's very loose and messy. I know Scratchy. Bill Sienkiewicz is Scratchy. Romita Jr., he can be Scratchy.
Mm.
But, and I know it's unpopular. I get it. But when I look at, like, other artists, other Batman, Superman artists of that time period, I just prefer them. I don't know what it is. I just prefer them. Maybe I like the clean style of that time period. I don't know.
Look, so I'm going to accept your opinion.
What is this segment called? Hashtag unpopular opinion.
Yes, I am going to accept your opinion. However, I will respectfully disagree. I have only read... Well, I've read some Infantino in digital. But
tell me why I'm wrong.
Most of the stories with Infantino art in them that I've read have been in either collections or single issues, all print. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I would say Infantino is one of the cleanest artists of the era.
Hmm. Well,
so you're drunk. I heard it. That was your that was your sign. I heard it.
I will happily, when I'm going through that collection, I'll send you not just the panel in reference, I'll send you the entire page.
Mm.
And you tell me if that panel that's on the page isn't really loose and a little messy.
Mm. Trust me,
I know I have like my, I think, and I believe this to be true. I believe he was the artist who got me into the Flash because I read the Flash Killing Reverse Flash.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first story arc that I ever read from a Flash comic book. And I believe he was the artist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, I was probably 8 years old. And at this point, I'm a little older. I could be a dum-dum, but the segment's called Unpopular Opinion. And that's just what it is. It might not be a fact.
Hmm.
This could be completely cuckoo. That's fine. That's why it's called Unpopular Opinion. Every time you mention JRJR, for me, that's Unpopular Opinion. Because I don't believe it and I don't see it.
Okay.
But move on.
No, that's fine. I mean, I don't see it with Infantina. So,
I'm telling you, within the last 2 years, I have read about 10 to 15 issues by him.
And it's always that, huh?
It is.
Wow.
And it's not even just like one panel from one page of an issue. No, it's throughout. Maybe it's just his style, his takes on both of those superheroes that I don't know. It rubs me the wrong way.
Well, I'm about to give my opinion.
Ooh, unpopular opinion.
Unpopular among a segment of the population.
Sure.
I will preface this hashtag unpopular opinion by saying that it is not a new opinion. I've mentioned this before. However, I will phrase it exactly like I mean it every time, and I may lose some friendships because of it.
Uh-oh.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
You know, Nick, I love Grant Morrison.
Yeah.
I think Grant Morrison is one of the greatest comic book writers of the past 30 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think he's just simply fantastic. I think he says a lot in his books. And my unpopular opinion is I think that people that don't like Grant Morrison don't like Grant Morrison because they're simply too dumb to understand what he's doing.
Wow. Hashtag mark timestamp this one. You think I'm gonna get some mail? Enjoy that one. You are just too dumb and unsophisticated to understand what Grant Morrison is talking about. I will completely agree with that unpopular opinion. I think people.
Julia says 10 out of 10 opinion.
I think people who say that get bent out of shape because Grant Morrison approached one of their Capes and Cowls characters and effed up that character, quote unquote, because the reader has put that character into a box that maybe that character, guess what? It's a make-believe character. That character should be able to grow and change. Do I believe that the same reader went and read Invisibles? No. Or read any of his non-super, quote-unquote, Capes and Cowls superhero stuff? No. They probably read Arkham Asylum and was pissed off by that. Or read Batman and Robin.
Yeah, Batman and Robin. That. So yeah. Dennis has a good question.
Sure.
He says, are you still dumb if you have to read it four times to get it?
No, because I read Invisibles three times already, the last time being 2 years ago. And I feel like I've only scratched 40% of that. It's one thing to be, is he confused by the story that's being told? Or is the story being told in so many levels? And is he adding on items like a stack of pancakes that you need multiple readings to completely wrap your head around it? Because I would suppose that reading Alan Moore's Swamp Thing once, there's no way in hell you're getting 100% of that story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
No way. I mean, for God's sakes, he wrote a story in one issue, wasn't it? It was a story that revolved around the beats of the story and the panel layout of the issue was the beating of a human heart. Remember that issue?
Vaguely.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. Like somebody reading that once, are they really going to get that?
Mm-hmm.
Doubtful. Mm-hmm. And I would say that about Grant Morrison's writing. Sure. Are there clunkers along the way? Yeah.
Of course.
Which, come on, look at any prose writer. There's clunkers along the way.
Mm.
But at least he swings for fences.
I agree. And you know, Alan Moore's got some of that too. The thing is, I think Alan Moore, like, does it on purpose more often, right? Because mm-hmm. Alan Moore's just like, F you comics, I don't give a crap what anybody says, I'll just write whatever the hell I want. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my first read-through of, like, Promethea, for example, took me 2 years,
mm-hmm.
right? And I don't think I'm a dumb guy, but that's a very thick book.
Mm-hmm.
I read Jerusalem one time. I still don't know what I read.
Yeah,
but I can appreciate it.
Right.
That's also Alan Moore, by the way. Right. But it's funny that you mentioned the Invisibles, because this is how this hot take, this hashtag unpopular opinion evolved. Because I immediately knew I wanted to talk about Grant Morrison. And right. And when DJ and I were talking about The Matrix, I brought up the Invisibles and we talked a little bit about it. Not a whole lot, because I don't think he had read it.
DJ, come on.
That's what I told him. But it's one of those things where, like, there is a lot in the Invisibles, mm-hmm. right? And yes, you can read it with like a certain type of knowledge and just enjoy it as a comic book. But like, if you know the material that inspires it, and I'm very familiar with it, then you get so much more out of it.
As you know well what I mean? As it could send you down rabbit holes of religion, spirituality,
yes,
government systems, crazy paranoid, like it's he can send you down like rabbit holes of like that has to be a conspiracy theory,
mm-hmm.
and then you go and research it and it's like, oh my God, there's so much there.
So funny that you mentioned that, because that's kind of how I tied it into the whole thing.
Mm.
Because there is a conspiracy theorist named David Icke that I love watching his stuff because it's just so crazy. His ideas stem from the same exact ideas that inspired Morrison to write The Invisibles.
Hmm.
Except David Icke has taken it like in a very literal level. Because, you know, in The Invisibles you have what's the church, like the dimensional beings? It's like the outer church or something like that. I can't remember the exact name of the organization.
Right, yeah.
But like David Icke has like the same exact thing in real life. Right, where like there's like a secret cult that is somehow involved with these like reptilian aliens that control like puppet humanity's history, basically. It's like if it's the Invisibles in real life, Nick. I promise you. Just look up David Icke sometime.
Is he an author?
Yes.
Or is he podcasting?
He's an author.
Oh, I want a podcast about this, but I will read books on this.
Look, just you don't need to read books. Just look up David Icke. He was a soccer player, a professional soccer player in like the 70s.
Wow.
And he had some like existential experience. And
i.e. Like, head concussions?
I can't remember what it was. I want to say he was in some kind of accident. Yes. Wow. And as a result of that, like, came up with this whole idea of these, like, alien entities that control humanity from the background.
That's awesome.
And it's, again, exactly like the Invisibles.
It's like the Masons or the Illuminati, but in alien form.
He's got the Masons on there, but they're not like the ultimate, you know what I mean?
Nice.
Dennis wants to know if he talks about transdimensional Bigfoot. No, he does
Ooh.
Not.
Oh, darn it. Come on, Ike.
But that needs to be a comic book, by the way.
I would read that.
Transdimensional Bigfoot.
I would happily read that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yes, so that's my hot take, Nick.
Oof.
And I apologize to Ronnie Barron and Daryl Taylor and a few other folks that hate Grant Morrison. Yeah. I still love you.
Right. You're just going to have to disagree. That's an unpopular opinion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's my number one.
That's very good.
What's your other one?
My last one. We've talked about this comic book. I know for a fact. One of my favorite comic books growing up, and I still, to this day, will have dreams of Spider-Man in my head. And every once in a while, it's Spider-Man who grows 4 additional arms.
Mm.
My hot take, and this unpopular opinion, stems from reading The Adventures of Superman by Gil Kane, the trade. My hot take is, even though he drew Peter Parker Spider-Man becoming an actual spider with 6 arms and 2 legs, I don't care for Gil Kane's art. He draws like 3 male models. That's it. Like, it might be a group of people, but my God, every person looks like a clone of one another. And they all have the same exact nose. And maybe it's just his style. It just drives me crazy. Especially with Superman, that thing drove me nuts. And I read his Atom. I liked his Atom. Some of the stuff I really liked. But I think it was just maybe it was a deadline thing. I don't know. But when I look at like the Spider-Man issues and his little like small little run on Amazing, he was a lot more detailed. And it's very similar to like, there's a lot of modern artists that you can tell. And by modern, I mean from like the 80s, 90s on. So I guess not that modern, 40 years ago. But you can tell when they're up against the wall and they still want to keep characters detailed, all of a sudden the backgrounds just become blank. And you'll just get pages of like blank backgrounds because they still want to keep, they're running out of time, but they want to keep the characters, you know, semi-detailed.
Yeah.
And Gil Kane felt like that with Superman. There were a lot of like just blank backgrounds or like maybe 20 lines thrown together in the background that simulated buildings, I'm guessing. I don't know. But just really, really loose. And I guess with Gil Kane, I would say a little sketchy for me. And trust me, like I said, I still have dreams of 6-armed Spider-Man. Freaking loved it. That was great. Those 2 issues, great. But for whatever reason, it's like, man, I can look at Gil Kane's art and it's like, it's very distinctive. It stands out.
Yeah.
And I get how historically it's like, ooh, Gil Kane. Hence the segment Unpopular Opinion. And guess what? If we lose European listeners because of this, I apologize. To
Oh, don't worry. We're about to get him back with my next opinion.
Thank God. Martin, I appreciate it.
Don't you worry. Dennis says, well, okay. When you have to draw a dozen books each month, .. I guess that's kind of true.
That totally is true. Yeah. I completely agree. He took on quite the burden, quite the workload.
This is not going to be an official hot take, but I used to have the same thing that you said about Gil Kane.
If it's not a hot take, but is it an unpopular opinion, though?
Well, it's definitely an unpopular opinion.
Awesome.
I don't feel this way now.
Okay.
But when I first started reading comics, I used to feel this way with Jack Kirby.
Oh, interesting.
Because when I looked at Kirby's art, I was like, why is everyone so obsessed with this guy's art? It looks horrendous. It's like scratchy and it looks unfinished. But through the years, reading more and more comics, I've definitely become to appreciate Jack Kirby, and I can totally see it. And I love Kirby's art.
His perspective is completely off. Why is that fist coming so far into the
anatomy's terrible. The perspective sucks. But like,
no, he's not doing that for that.
Right, and that's the thing, right? It's not. Right. I was expecting a certain thing, and the thing is, in particular, when he was drawing, is that he was doing stuff that nobody else was doing, and he was doing stuff decades before other people did it. Mm-hmm. So as a result, don't worry, Dennis, not heresy. I love Jack Kirby. I'm talking about Martin from 25 years ago, 30 years ago. Okay, this is a whole new Martin.
Mike Myers, please don't unsubscribe to
our podcast. So to bring back the European listeners, this is actually, I mean, it is comics related, but it's also overly engrossing. Because
Can I take a guess?
You won't guess, but yes.
Is your unpopular opinion that you wish comic books would bring back superheroes punching out Adolf Hitler? Guys, I know it's really an unpopular opinion, but I want people to punch out Adolf Hitler again. Maybe Stalin. Okay.
Wasn't there one just recently, like a year ago, the Superman one? It was less than that, maybe 6 months ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
People were going crazy.
No, I can't believe this. Captain America has become so political. He's never done this before. Oh, wait. He's done it about 20 other times in history. But I only remember the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Ay, ay, ay. People have short memories. No, I will go on to say that one of the greatest comic book writers of all time is also one of the least recognized comic book writers of all time.
Chester Brown.
Now remember, I'm trying to bring back the European audience. So can you guess?
Right. Yeah, Chester Brown.
No, not Seth. Chester Brown. It's Alejandro Jodorowsky, my friend.
Ooh, the Incal. Ooh.
Yes, the Incal and Meta Barons. So shout out to Travis for introducing me to Jodorowsky, because I knew Jodorowsky from other things, but not from comics.
From Santa Sangrije that we talked about before. Yes. Hello.
And then Travis introduced me to Metabarons, which led me down a whole rabbit hole of Jodorowsky. Yeah. And so I've now read all of Jodorowsky's comic books, and they are incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. He does a lot with what's the artist? Mobius?
Yes, Mobius.
Fantastic artist as well. And the things that go on in those books are just pure insanity, but they're beautiful to look at, and they're very deep and like really well thought out, and like everything has its place, and everything advances the story. And I think Jodorowsky is just completely underrated.
Yeah.
Mm-mm-mm. Yep. Also, I would love to see
me back in, so it's not an unpopular opinion.
Good.
Was a great opinion.
I would love to have seen Jodorowsky's take on Dune, which never happened. But I think it would have been amazing.
But they have a documentary out about it.
They do, but it's not the same. I want to see the movie.
I agree, but, you know, hey, it's just like not getting the Tim Burton Superman. But there's a documentary about it. You can still go and see scenes from it.
Yes, that would have been a thing.
Yeah. Nicolas Cage in that black weird costume. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So there's a whole thing about the costume, because it's not black.
Right. It just filmed that way.
Yeah. It just filmed that way.
Right. Right. Right.
But
Jodorowsky is so good. Oh my God. I'm telling you, when I saw Santa Sangre on a big screen, original run, that still is burned into my perverted brain to this day. It is. Oh my God, the son's arms as the mother's arm. It's just like as a young high schooler, I never even thought, I never could conceptualize something that strange and bizarre, but yet it was so appealing visually. It was just shocking and stunning. So I think it's on Amazon Prime, or you can rent it on Amazon.
Is it?
Highly recommend.
And funny enough, Jodorowsky came up when I put out my my Matrix episode with DJ, because one of my listeners was like, oh, you should watch Holy Mountain.
Yes.
Which I had seen, but Holy Mountain, like the Matrix, rips off a lot of the themes of Holy Mountain. So
yeah.
Except I think there's a little bit more drugs in Holy Mountain, and like a literal Jesus. So
that was the
term. There's that. Yes. Yeah. What was Holy Mountain like? Mid '70s.
Yeah, he was Morrison before Morrison.
He was Morrison before Morrison.
Yeah, God
That's
love him.
True. Oh. I do. Jodorowsky, go check his stuff out. I think he just publishes on Humanoids, Humanoids has the rights.
That sounds.
And a lot of them are on Comixology Unlimited, so you can get them for free if you have that. Julian says, speaking of movies, The Matrix rips off. Let's appreciate Dark City. Correct.
Yes, Julian.
Correct. With the always beautiful Jennifer Connelly. Kiefer Sutherland. Man, that movie's packed.
Yeah, it still looks beautiful.
Yes. Matter of fact.
Sadly, that director went on to direct other films nowhere close to Dark City.
Oh, really?
It just didn't, even visually, did it? I don't know. That was just lightning in a bottle.
Now I need to look this up. Alex Proyas, hey?
Yes.
He did The Crow, then he did Dark City, iRobot. Knowing was terrible. That was the Nicolas Cage one where they're on a plane. And Gods of Egypt, oof. Don't ever watch that.
That's like, the guy who directed The Cell. Cause I think he started off with REM's Losing My Religion, and then he directed The Cell, which visually was insanely stunning.
The Jennifer Lopez?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
And then he went on and directed some movie that completely reminded me of Frank Miller's 300?
Yes, Immortals.
Garbage. There you go.
Yep.
But The Cell just looked so beautiful. And then I don't know what the hell happened. He just, I don't know.
Let's see. That guy did The Cell. Then he did The Fall. The Fall. I don't remember that. Then he did Immortals. That was terrible. Mirror, Mirror, I did not see. But that's got... never mind. I don't remember who's got it. But it's a Snow White remake. Yeah. And then Selfless with Deadpool. What's his name? Ryan Reynolds. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep.
Yeah, not a list of greatest hits. You know what's weird? I didn't realize... what's his name now? Shit, the guy that did Mad Max, George Miller.
Yes.
I didn't realize George Miller directed Happy Feet.
Really?
Did you know this?
Wow. So George Miller needed a paycheck so he could go back to the Mad Max universe, huh?
I guess, man. So, and it was weird because I was watching, what's that YouTube channel that does that kind of stuff? Wisecrack. Wisecrack did like a philosophy of Mad Max. And they compared it to Happy Feet because it's the same director. Mm-hmm. And like, I didn't realize the amount of like sexual tension in Happy Feet.
Really?
Yes. Like the King Penguin basically has an orgy at one point. Did not catch this. Yes. What? Yes. Happy Feet, not a kid's movie.
Maybe it should be, I never watched all of Happy Feet.
It should be rated R.
Yikes.
Julian says, in all fairness, he won an Academy Award for Happy Feet, so he's the real winner. That's true. That's very true. I did see Happy Feet. It was good, but I don't remember that stuff. But seeing it in light of the themes of Mad Max, they actually had a lot of similar themes, which is kind of weird. Although maybe not weird, man. You know? Oh, I didn't mean to ring the bell. My apologies. I do see, like, not always, but there's a lot of, like, Pixar and DreamWorks and Disney movies that like tell kids stories and they're kids movies, but like it's not kids doing them, right? It's adults, and like sometimes they put some of their baggage in the movies. And let me tell you, there's some kids' movies that are like really fucking perverted. And like magical, like magic, like Grant Morrison magic.
Oh.
Which I like when you watch them, you don't think about it. But then if you start thinking about it, you're like, ah, yeah, that's like this story of this demon from whatever culture. And you're like, okay.
Huh.
Yeah. You should look up like, what would be the term? What could you look up? You could do like esotericism in Disney or something like that. I bet you'd come up with like a whole list.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
It's true. But, yeah, I don't know. Jodorowsky. How do we get to that? Oh, Dune. Yeah. I do want to throw this out. Maybe the chat knows this, maybe not. But if for anybody listening, I want to know. I don't know if you know this, Nick, but one of my favorite book series, not funny book series, is the Three Body Problem trilogy. I don't know if I've talked about it on here, but it's fantastic. There's three books. It's Dead Body Problem, The Dark Forest, and, man, I wish I remember the name of the last one. Something End. Fantastic series. Okay. It spans, like, thousands of years, and it's, like, basically this war that's going to happen between humanity and aliens. But it's all, like, veiled in this metaphor. There's a lot of, like mathematical and geometrical imagery, and some, like, it's really weird. Just, I cannot describe this film or this series of books, okay. But it's like hardcore sci-fi. Dennis, yes, worth reading. Go read it now. But Amazon,
who wrote it?
Shixin Liu is the name of the writer.
Okay.
Amazon purchased the rights to turn the series into a TV show.
Oh, wow.
And I think they changed their mind and they're actually going to make it into feature-length films now.
Hmm.
But I have not heard anything about it since they bought the rights in 2018. So if anybody knows what is going on with this thing, please tell me. Find me on Twitter at GeekVine, because I want to know if this is still being made and when it's coming out. Because Amazon paid like $1 billion for this thing.
Wow.
Yeah. I think they paid $1 billion for Lord of the Rings, too.
Jeez.
Yeah. Which I don't know what's happening with that either. If anybody knows about that, I want to know. Because
it must Lord of the be a pretty important IP for them to spend that much money worldwide.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, the guy won like a gazillion awards with this series.
Gotcha.
Like, it's not like your typical alien sci-fi, right?
Mm.
It's pretty deep. It's pretty deep. And goes into a lot of interesting subjects. Kind of like the reason why I like Arrival, right? It's not just like aliens come to Earth and like shit happens. There's a lot more going on with that interaction than just that. But yeah, Three Body Problem. If you have not read it, go read those books. You have to pay attention. It's nice. Not one of those things where you're just like, let me read a couple pages and I'll come back to it later. Like, you need to allot some time and sit down and read it and process and go from there. Back in production, I think, since New Zealand has competent leadership. Ah, yes. Listen, if there's one place in the world that I would rather live than here, it is New Zealand. Thank you, Dennis. That's very true.
Even with the big spiders?
They have giant spiders. I don't care. They have a female president. She's rather attractive, and she's extremely bright.
She is extremely bright.
And also, they barely had coronavirus because the government isn't a piece of shit.
As well as being very transparent with everyone.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. The problem is all the rich people in the world own property in New Zealand because apparently it's the place in the world least likely to get hit by an asteroid.
Really?
Yes. So a lot of the uber wealthy around the world own ranches in New Zealand. Also, you know, it's very sparsely populated, so they have a lot of open land. But yeah, like, what's the guy that that owns the Facebook stock? What, that douchebag? The guy that, with the Hulk Hogan thing. What's his name?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we can't mention him by name. He might sue us. That guy, I think, like, Bezos has a ranch out there. Actually, funny enough, Bezos also owns, like, 300 acres Somewhere off the Peter Thiel. Thank you, Dennis. Please, Peter Thiel, you can sue Dennis, not us. We did not mention your name. Bezos owns like this 300-acre ranch and like off some mountain in the Rockies, near where he built that like forever clock. You know about the forever clock?
No.
Yeah, so Bezos invested like millions of dollars for them to build this clock like inside of like underneath a mountain. It's like the most accurate clock in the world. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. True story. Look it up sometime. The forever clock. I don't know why he did it, but there's conspiracy theories, I promise you.
Oh, I'm sure.
But yeah, New Zealand's beautiful. I would love to live there. I would love to live in the Netherlands. That seems like a very nice, progressive place. Mm-hmm. Like they don't even let you drive anywhere. You have to bike. That's nice. Yeah. And I would love to live in Denmark as well. That seems like a beautiful place. And Norway. Matter of fact, my wife and I were talking about this. We considered moving to Norway.
Oh.
The problem with going to one of those Scandinavian countries, it would be very hard to get like citizenship. So I don't know how the work situation worked out. You know what I mean?
And then did the wife see a hostel? And she's like, we cannot go to Norway. No way.
Ah, yes. See, Julian knows it's a $42 million clock called Clock of the Long Now. Bam. Thank you, Julian.
Yikes.
Thank you,
Julian. Sounds like science fiction.
You would think, but it's science sadly, fact.
Sadly, it is not.
But no, watching that World's Most Extraordinary Homes, like, dude, I could get past Norway having like 9 months of darkness a year.
Mm-hmm.
Just for the simple fact that it is freaking gorgeous. I can build my cabin atop a mountain. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe like inside a mountain because it's very windy. So I don't want my cabin to blow away. But but yeah, Norway. That sounds like my kind of place.
Definitely.
And my wife just like starts pouring sweat when it's over 60. So
Perfect for her.
I think my wife's hitting menopause, Nick. Can we talk about that on this podcast? Is that allowed?
Feel free. It's your show.
9 months of darkness, that's how we get 30 Days of Night. Do you want 30 Days of Night? Yes, I love 30 Days of Night. Steve Niles, fantastic. It's a great comic. It's a fun film. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. Yeah, so I think my wife's hitting menopause, Nick. I'm glad she doesn't listen because she will be very angry that I'm discussing this on a podcast. But you know what? It's your show, so I do what you want. You want me to talk about this, so this is what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
No, actually, I'm not going to talk about it. But she does, like, dude. So she keeps the house in, like, the low to mid-60s, which is good.
Yeah,
because I also get hot. It's a Ferretti thing. Ferrettis get hot.
Yeah, you got a big beard. It's going to conduct heat.
It's true. I do get a big beard. I wish you're hitting menopause at 30. She's 29, okay? She is forever 29 because she bases her age on the clock of the long now. but yeah, like we're both hot natured, and I've always been that way. Like I hate heat. Like when I lived in New York, it was hot, terrible garbage. Mm. Because the thing about New York, like yes, it's up in a northern latitude, but it is so humid.
Mm.
So humid because it's surrounded by water. So in the summertime, it is hot as hell. And in the winter, it used to be cold. But then global warming happened, and then just like it never snowed again. So like it wasn't terrible. And here I am living in the South where, you know, it gets like 100 degrees.
It's just sticky.
But at least I'm not on the coast. You know what I mean? So it's not a dry heat, but it's hot.
Hmm.
Not like when I was in Texas, man. When I was in Texas, I was in Tyler. So it's like close to the border of Louisiana. So you get that like swamp ass heat.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and, you know, it still gets, like, high up. I remember the weekend that I moved to Texas, it was 113 degrees. And wow. I thought I was going to die. I immediately regretted that decision. but, yeah, anything, like, over 65, just, like, ugh. Like, it's even 70. Like, a 70 overcast with a little bit of a breeze, cool.
Yeah.
But anything beyond that, I can't. So Norway, I mean, yes, it would be like negative 20 in the wintertime. But summertime, it's like a perfect like 65, 70 the whole summer. And then like the sun never goes down. So you have like 6 months of summer. And then 6 months of, I hope you got your supplies at the store because you are not leaving your house. Oof. Yes, that's my story about my wife's menopause. You see how that goes? I didn't even talk about it.
You're going to have a little bit of patience with her while she's enjoying all that.
Oh, buddy, I have all the patience in the world.
Yeah, I know. You're Johnny Patience.
I am Johnny Patience. True, I am. But it doesn't help. So I've been doing, I'm all into the meditation stuff.
Right.
I started trying this new meditation for wintertime, for when wintertime comes, so I can meditate outside. And I get so hot doing this meditation. Really? You picture this like ball of fire in your stomach, basically. Mm-hmm. And like Tibetan monks use this to meditate in the wintertime outside in the Himalayas where it's, negative 3,000 degrees.
Wow.
And they just like chill there in a t-shirt. So I'm trying this out so when wintertime comes, I can go and meditate outside. But it doesn't work.
Maybe your wife needs that.
It doesn't work that well in the summer when it's already like, I think it was 87 today, Nick.
Oof.
And it was humid because it rained half the day. It's like 80% humidity and 87 degrees. Ugh, it was so terrible.
Yeah, we had rain yesterday, late last night. And then this morning, I told Julie, the cruise director, let's go out for a walk at like 8 in the morning. And I swear to God, I came back and asked Alexa what the temperature was. And she was like, oh, it's 84. Like 84. Oh, my God. And it was so like humid out. It was just disgusting. So I feel you.
See, here we go. Julian with the wind. So he just sent me a link on Twitter. Hidden Mickey Esoterica. WordPress.com. My wow. Disney World occult experience. This is fantastic.
Does he realize we're recording a podcast right now and not to send you down rabbit holes while recording?
I am all about this. Bookmarked. Thank you, Julian.
Yeah, he's the best.
That's fantastic. Why don't you practice imagining a block of ice in your chest instead of imagination process is what you're practicing, not the ball of fire specifically?
There you go.
Good point, Julian.
That is a good one.
Good point. Well, the thing is, I do not ice baths, but I do cold showers afterwards. And so when I go and take my cold shower, I'm not freezing cold because I have this ball of fire in my stomach. You see? You understand now, Julian?
I like it.
Mm-hmm. I have circulation problems, Nick. So I'm trying to improve that through my cold showers.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Shock the system back?
I don't know. It's a thing, apparently. We'll see if it works. We'll see if it works. I had to have surgery on my legs a couple years ago. I don't want to have more surgery on my legs.
That's true. Just like Peter Gabriel once said, you have to shock the monkey
with
that cold shower.
Then it says it activates the brown fat. That's okay. The brown fat's good. You don't want the white fat. The brown fat's fine. That's what swimmers have. They get the little layer of brown fat when they swim. If you imagine a block of ice when you take a cold shower, the shower won't be cold either. Yeah, but then you'll still be cold because you're thinking about being cold and the shower's cold. Although I guess you might be right because if you think that you're a block of ice, then that would be colder than the cold water in the shower. That's a good point, Julian. I'm not going to try that because I want to freeze in the shower, but thank you.
Julian for the win.
Mm-hmm. Man, having people in chat is fun.
See?
I hope when people listen, they're like, we should join the chat next time.
Yeah, and we might actually do video next time other than 15 minutes worth.
We'll try to figure that out for next time.
Or just all me because you're sitting in a completely darked out film room. I couldn't even see you. I saw bits of your beard. That was it.
Listen, my beard is full of luxury and wonder. I'm going to grow the largest beard of any Ferretti in history. And I will have to change our logo because right now that beard is very skimpy on that logo.
That doesn't even show the majestic quality of it right now.
Yeah, I can take the bottom of my beard and move it up my face, and it reaches right above my eyeball.
Oh my God. Holy crap. Wow.
Yes.
You sound like you have the beard from, I don't know if you ever listened to Elvis Costello, but he did an album called Spike. Mm-hmm. And right after Spike, he hit this, and I think it was right around the time he was going through some personal crisis, and he let his manicured beard during Spike. The following album, he had this Amish looking beard that was just en fuego. It was so crazy. And it sounds like you're doing that. It sounds like you're becoming a mountain man.
Look, I want to get my beard down to like at least my sternum.
Wow.
Okay. I don't want to go like, what's those guys?
Amish?
No, the music guys. The brothers. Music guys. What are they called? Dennis knows. Come on, Dennis.
The Bacon Brothers?
No, not the Bacon Brothers. ZZ Top. Thank you, Julian. See, this is why it's good to have the chat. I like this. This is fun.
You know, Julian only gives you facts. I'm trying to give you comic relief. That's all I'm doing. Every one of my answers is a joke.
Listen, why has it taken us 5 years to start doing live streams?
Hey, I suggested having Julian on every week, and that got shot down. So,
well, not by me.
Right.
He just never showed.
We won't name the listeners.
That's okay. Listeners don't know, but back in the day, Julian was a part of the show.
Oh, for sure.
And then he abandoned us.
Well, life gets in the way.
I know. He's forgiven.
But he's back with a vengeance right now.
I mean, he is the best for ready, so.
Hey, I've been saying that for years.
Yes. Here's my concern, Nick. This is episode 248.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
This is episode 248.
We have to have video by 250. Come on.
We promised the listeners something for episode 250. And right. Now that we're doing live streams, I am very concerned about the status of this podcast when this episode releases. YouTube might just delete like all of my accounts from the entire universe.
Oh, they could, for sure. Justifiably, they could.
Mm. Yes. Have you used the Batman TAS notepad? Yes. No, not yet. So Dennis was very kind. I thought he was joking. I can't remember what we were talking about. And I sent him a link to something. And he made some joke about Emma Frost and Batman. And I thought it was just a joke. And then the next day, I went to get my mail. And actually, we went to walk the dogs. And Reagan's like, oh, there's a package here from Dennis. From Chandler. And I was like, I don't know any Chandler. And she's like, I don't know. It's this Chandler here. And it's got your name on it. What's up, Andrew? Ah, look who it is. Andrew, 2 hours late. Shame on you.
Oh.
But anyways.
Oh, wait, that's Shaw? Okay, yes, wrap Shaw. It up. Martin, let's wrap it up.
It's gotta time go. To talk aliens, boys.
Gotta go. Shaw's so, on. Gotta go.
So I had this box from Chandler, and I was like, oh, that must be Dennis Chandler. And I got into the house after we walked the dogs, and I opened it, and he had sent me an X-Men book with Emma Frost on the cover. And then there was like I wish I remember what the name of it was exactly. It's like a Batman the Animated Series comic with like a little notepad in like a little note in a little Batman TAS bag. It was awesome. It was awesome. So I thank you now officially on the podcast, even though I thanked them on Discord when I opened the box.
There you go.
Yeah, it was good. Back to school pack. Yes, thank you. Batman, the Animated Series, back to school pack.
Oh, that's perfect.
And we didn't get a chance to talk about the heart of Batman. We could do that next time. I didn't get a chance to finish it because I watched so many movies today.
Dang it. You weren't able to finish it?
Well, I asked Zoe if she wanted to watch it, and she didn't. So I was like, all right, we'll watch this other stuff.
And then did you say, well, it sounds like this isn't Father's Day for me, then. Is it Father's Day for you?
So we'll talk about Batman, the heart of the Batman. It sounds cool. I'm actually I'm curious. We haven't talked about this. So you know that DC's doing all kinds of crazy stuff. We should talk about this before we wrap up.
Sounds good.
How long are we into this?
Hour and a half.
1 minute and 30 seconds. Okay, cool. So Disney's – not Disney. DC is doing crazy stuff. They're not distributing comics to Diamond anymore.
What?
Crazy. They're like not doing, I mean, I can understand this part. They're not doing like any cons. So they just like created their own con. You know what this is like? This is like, what was it, Nintendo? Remember when Nintendo dropped out of E3 and like started doing Nintendo World or whatever?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
And everyone's like, oh, what the hell? Like, we have to do this. And then everyone's like, it's actually a pretty good idea to just do your own convention. And so now, like, everybody does it.
The entire con is focused on
just on you.
Me.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know what the news cycle is only talking about? My stuff. No one else.
Yes. So, so DC's doing this. So they're putting out their own convention. And because the world is ravaged by a pandemic, maybe. Depends who you ask. If you ask David Icke, he'll tell you it's a plandemic.
Ooh.
Andrew will like that. I threw that out for Andrew. So they're doing their own convention. I think it's next month. Wow. And it's completely free.
Will it be as good as when Morrison had his own convention in Vegas?
Oh, Grant Morrison Con. I wish I would have been there.
Same here.
Boy, do I wish I would have been there. But they're streaming all their stuff, I think, on YouTube. And I assume also on their apps, right? So like HBO Max and DC Universe.
That's smart.
But everything's going to be free. They're doing like panels and I think they're like streaming shows. Matter of fact, they've been streaming a lot of shows. They did a live stream for Doom Patrol Season 1, Episodes 1 through 3 this weekend.
Oh, wow.
And then you shared that thing, the Heart of the Batman, that documentary, which I think is on DC Universe, if I'm not mistaken.
Don't doubt it.
But doing all this kind of stuff for...
Yeah, they also just streamed out this weekend The History of Superman, mm-hmm. and that's an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also did The History of the Batmobile, and that's an hour.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so all those are all on DC Universe. I know that.
Yeah, I'm sure
I've seen that Superman one.
I'm just saying via YouTube, so...
Yep.
So why would I get DC Universe app if you're putting out all this great
Right?
Like, wouldn't you get that stuff and just do a trailer and put that up on your YouTube channel? Like, that just... doesn't make any sense.
Well, let's be honest. What this actually tells us, Nick, is that nobody has DC Universe.
Right. Or no, not no one has it. How important is that app to DC and Warner Brothers? Mm-hmm. Sounds like not that important.
Yes. Well, I think this whole thing stemmed from when AT&T bought out Warner Media. Because you know AT&T. AT&T is the devil.
Well, they guess what? They want money. And if something ain't producing bottom line, the thing I'm curious about with this DC con, will this push DC not to do cons since they can have the spotlight for one weekend and I'm sure other cons will move out of the way? It'd be smart to do. You wouldn't be flying all these creators around.
That's true.
And that's then, true. You know, buying up all these spaces in these cons.
That's true. The thing is, here's the key point to remember.
All right.
Because when coronavirus hit, everyone's worried about comics. No more comics. What are the shops going to do? Let's support the shops. Let's do this, right? Let's do fundraisers for the shops. Let's do fundraisers for artists, this, that, and the other.
Sure.
Yep. And now we get this whole thing. Oh, Andrew says DC Universe is not in Australia. Well, shame on DC. Australia is...
They must be afraid of the large...
Yeah, they're afraid of snakes. And, ooh, I have a snake story. I forgot. We'll share that. Australia's cool, not as cool as New Zealand. Sorry, Andrew.
Ooh, hot take. Unpopular opinion.
There's the bell. So, no, Australia's a beautiful place. I would love to go
there. In your face, Margot Robbie.
Listen, it is my dream to one day go to Australia and watch some real football with Andrew Shaw.
That would be a great dream.
Some real football where players don't whine and wear 3 billion pads. They just beat the shit out of each other like real men.
Okay? Right.
Australian football, the best sport of all time.
Yes.
But yeah, like they're just pissing everybody off, man. Like a lot of retailers are not happy with this whole thing.
Oh yeah.
Right? Because you have to use DCBS or what's the New York shop? Midtown. They own these new distributors and they're not doing Diamond anymore. Which like you kind of expected that, right? When they started doing their own separate book via previews, like okay, maybe like there's something going on.
For sure.
But all this time, everyone's like, let's support shops, let's support shops. And now here comes DC, one of the biggest comic book retailers or one of the biggest comic book publishers in the world. And they say, let's just shit on shops. Okay. That's what it says. I mean, maybe not. Maybe that wasn't the intention, but that's the way it comes off. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think it might be good for fans, but it's going to be terrible for the middleman, right? Both in terms of the comic book distribution and in terms of conventions. Because what if, like, you can't go to C2E2 anymore to see, like, whatever, Jim Lee or something, right? Now you have to go to, like, DC Con. What's that going to do to some of these other conventions? And, you know, they might still have a presence in big places, right, like San Diego or New York Comic Con. But those things are, like, expensive, man, right? It's like...
They are.
Like, San Diego, it's like... tens of thousands of dollars to get a table.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Maybe in the long run, this is smart for DC to do.
I don't know. I hope so. I hope it works out for everybody in the end. DC Con sounds pretty cool. Yes. DC Con, trademark, Nerdy Legion 2020. So now that that's on record, if DC uses it, we're going to sue the shit out of them.
Yeah. Finally, we get some money from this podcast.
Get the AT&T money, baby.
Heck yeah.
So since Andrew's here, let's talk about things that will kill you. I had an encounter with a snake yesterday.
What?
Yes, a snake, Nick. It was 30 foot long. That's not true. It was not. So my in-laws came over yesterday because it was my wife's, as we like to call it, happy Saturday. It was her birthday.
Nice.
She turned 29 again. Yes.
Yeah.
29 nice. Again. And... Julian had an encounter with a vulture. So my in-laws came over and my wife ordered the pizza. They went and got it. The best pizza I've had in my entire life, Nick.
Yeah, Domino's has stepped up their game.
No. It was from Antonio's.
Antonio's.
It's a new pizza place we have here. The guy that owns it is an Italian guy from New Jersey. So you know he knows how to make good pizza.
Is he bringing the water down from New Jersey?
No. I will say this. I told Aaron Bell the next time he comes down, we need to go to this place.
Oh, you want to see how Jersey it is?
Because
let me
tell you, even Aaron Bell would love this pizza.
Are you sure?
I am 1,000% positive.
Wow. Okay?
Because I know exactly what he's talking about when he talks about there is no pizza but New York pizza.
Sure.
This is 99% New York pizza. And the Dang. Reason I say 99% is the 1% is the amount less grease that it has on the pizza.
Nice.
Okay. you invite Aaron, but you don't invite me. That's why you're the worst for any. Dude, you're always invited. I don't need to invite you. You're always invited.
Who are you talking to right now?
Julian,
sound like a
see,
crazy person.
You need to be in the chat so you can see the messages.
No, you need to be explaining this for a listener.
Oh, that's true. So Julian says you invite Aaron, but you don't invite me. That's why you're the worst for Reddy.
That's true. He's not wrong.
I am the worst for Reddy.
Yeah, he's not wrong.
But like I said, you don't need an invite. You just show up. You know what I mean? You show up.
I don't think he can just walk into the wife's birthday party and just start chowing down on pizza and
not
have them be like, well, if we knew he was coming, we would have ordered an extra pizza. Now everyone can't partake.
Well, so when my wife made the order, she's like, how many pizzas do I get? I'm thinking she's going to order from like Papa John's, right?
So you're thinking like 45 pizzas?
So I said like, well, just get like 3 or 4. Right, because
sure.
it was me, my wife, Zoe, Reagan, and her parents.
Nice.
So I figured like 6 people, 3 pizzas, that's plenty. I mean, like, the girls eat like one or two pieces. You know what I mean?
Still, that's only half a pie for each person. Come on now. Where's the leftovers? When I eat Antonio, you know what's great about Antonio's? The next day. That night, you have a cold piece. The next day, you throw some in the toaster oven.
See, you made you made Julian mad.
What?
He says, damn, and now my boy is calling me fat. Last time I support this live stream.
Are you kidding me? That's the last thing I'm saying. Wait, is Julian saying that four pizzas would have been fine for now seven people? Five adults and two kids?
He thinks
seven pizzas and four adults is fine? His pizza ratio is messed up, though.
Well, I mean, I guess if there was one more, we have to get one more pizza, and then you'd have leftovers, right?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. What if he walked in, you already ordered the pizza, the pizzas are en route from the in-laws, and then Julian decides, or any adult, decides to surprise party that, you know in your head, you're like, well, I guess everyone's going to have two pieces now instead of half a pizza. Son of a bitch. Because that's an extra adult mouth.
Oh, that's
not
true.
Julian. He's the body Adonis. Let's not forget that. The rainbow unicorn.
He is the rainbow unicorn.
Yes.
So I said to her, well, just get three, right? Because I figure three pizzas, that's like four slices a piece, right? And I know the girls won't eat that. Okay. Adorable. Julian says, I used to order eight pizzas for 10 adults at work.
See?
All right, fine. Listen, whatever. Fine.
Fatal error.
I said three.
Ferretti fail right there.
Well, I said four. She's like, are you sure? I said, maybe three? She's like,
Was she thinking five? When you said four, she said, are you sure?
I don't know what she was thinking.
Five, and then you overcorrected down to three because you thought she thought three?
I thought she thought four was too many.
That's what I'm saying. But in her head, when she said, really, do you think she was thinking five?
Well, listen, the thing is, I did not know where she was ordering from, right? I just assumed Papa John's, because usually when we get pizza, it's either Papa John's or sometimes she gets from Little Caesars, not the garbage $5 pizza. Like, they have somewhat real pizza, quote unquote real pizza.
Right? She loves the crazy psycho CEO of Papa John's, Mr. John's.
Mr. John's.
She's a big fan of Peyton Manning, of course, Papa. As we know. Yes.
That's true. Dennis says so you can never go wrong with too much pizza. Yes, that's true.
You can't. You misordered. You got this wonderful pizza.
Uh-huh.
I want you to go into this story, but let's jump forward. How many pieces did you have cold the same night? And then I also want to know, how many did you have today for lunch?
So you got to remember, this story ends with snakes. Okay, so don't forget that.
You order three pizzas. The in-laws hand you the pizzas out in the driveway. You see a 30-foot snake, and are you saying all three boxes fell on the driveway because you screeched like a little girl? Is that what you're telling me now?
No, that's not what happened. Okay. Andrew says even bad pizza's pretty good. That is true. There is no such thing as bad pizza. Okay, hey. I'm gonna correct Aaron Bell before he says a goddamn word. Okay, there is no such thing as bad pizza. You can have the shittiest pizza in the world, and just by the simple fact that it creates this five-letter word that is pizza, it is automatically fine.
I'm going to give you another hashtag unpopular opinion. Within the last couple of years. And I haven't had this since college. So it's been decades. Last couple of years, this is where the unpopular opinion comes in. I had Domino's. Domino's up their game, my friend. I got news for you.
I know.
That $6 piece of pizza, pretty good.
Pretty good.
And you know how much I had? You know who I ordered for two people? You know how many pizzas we ordered? Two. You know how many pieces of pizza I had that night, Cole? More than two. You know how many pieces I had the following day? Way more than two. You're crazy. Only ordering three.
Look, I assumed we're just getting pizza from Papa John's or whatever, and they have smaller slices, right? I was like, cool. half a pie apiece, that's plenty. Not thinking now, she was going to order from Antonio's.
Let me throw this out as well. If you're thinking Papa John's, I get it. If you're going to, if you're justifying Papa John's only ordering three, if you're justifying, but also with Papa John's, I knew she was going to order the garlic knots and the breadsticks and the marinara sauce and the dessert bullshit. Then I can see, okay, three pizzas for four adults. That makes sense because guess what? The kids are going to eat all that bullshit that you just named off right now. So yeah. Okay. Three pizzas sounds right there. But now with, who was this? Antonio Banderas pizza?
Antonio Banderas pizza.
Yes. Okay. Which, hey, fantastic. I'm glad he finally has work after his riveting voiceover work in Shrek.
Hey. He's got a good movie. Go watch Automata. It's good. Julian will agree.
Okay. Well, maybe I will. Okay. I will. So this Antonio Banderas pizza, are you ordering larges? Extra large? How circumference-wise, how big are these? Or did these all fall on the ground when you saw this 30-foot snake? And I hate to say it, you still failed because even if a pizza box opens up and falls top down onto a dirty driveway, I still might eat that shit. That's right.
Yeah, look,
it's still pizza.
I'm with you. There is no shame in my game, my friend.
Hell yeah.
So, all right. So I say three. She said, I say four. She said, are you sure? Well, three? She's like, yeah, I think three. I said, all right, cool. So I'm outside reading, okay? So a few minutes go by. I decide to go inside. I use the bathroom. As I'm going to the bathroom, she's in the bedroom, and I hear her on the phone ordering the pizza, okay? So she orders three large pizzas, okay? She ordered a Florentine pizza, which is like a white sauce and spinach.
Ooh.
She orders a taco pizza. That's her favorite. She loves a taco pizza.
That makes no sense. Okay.
Listen, this is what I thought, but let me
cold lettuce. Wait, are you saying it's cooked and then they put on shredded cold lettuce on the top?
No, it had like lettuce leaves on it.
But is it cold? Because I've had taco pizza that has like the cold lettuce on top.
No,
which is complete bullshit.
No, it's cooked.
Okay, all right.
Cooked. All right. We'll get to this taco pizza.
Yeah.
And then she ordered a pepperoni mushroom.
Okay.
And she orders large.
Sure.
And I'm like, well, that's weird. Like, when I order from Papa John's, I just like order and they just send me what they send me. You know what I mean?
Can I guess what's going to happen at the end of this?
Sure.
Since this is Antonio Banderas's pizzeria off the boat from Italy, Antonio.
Uh-huh.
Is his version of a large pizza one of those uber small size pizza, like 10 inch?
Like a personal pan pizza?
Yeah. And you're like, this is large? Like, it's not US large, like it's European large. It's like, no, this isn't large.
Antonia's a midget, a 10 inch pizza is like an extra large.
You should have said grande. Come on.
All right. So she orders a pizza. She's like, all right. So I ordered the pizza. My parents are going to pick it up in like 30 minutes. I said, cool. Julia says, it's, let's be clear, it's not large, it's venti. And that's true.
Thank you.
Although I don't think that works for pizza because venti means 20 because it's a 20-ounce cup. So I don't think you can have a 20-ounce pizza.
But 20-inch circumference.
You can have a 20-inch circumference pizza. There we go. Mm-hmm. All right. So I don't think anything about this pizza, right? I go to the bathroom. I go back outside. I'm reading my book.
Sure.
And my in-laws come over, right? So my mother-in-law comes in, I see her, I greet her, whatever, and then here comes my father-in-law, like, having a hard time carrying this pizza.
What?
Okay, and I look at it, and I said, oh my God, that is a large pizza. Because quite literally, Nick, not only is it a large pie, it is the largest box of pizza I've seen since I moved down south. How long ago was that? 20 years ago? Maybe not that long. But a long time, okay? It is a very large box of pizza.
Did he have to pull it out of the trunk? Like it was too big to even put in the back seat?
Well, I mean, the box is square, Dennis, but the pizza is round. Dennis wanted to know if it's square or round. Okay. So, and he's like, where do I put this? I said, my God, that's a lot of pizza. So I grabbed the pizza and I set it on the counter and I get it and I open it up and I was like, this is the most beautiful pizza I've seen in a very long time. Because, I mean, if you've had New York pizza, you know what I'm talking about. When you have New York pizza, New Yorkers don't fuck around with pizza.
Mm-hmm.
It is very large.
Mm.
Matter of fact, my favorite place to eat pizza was this little pizza joint near Columbia University. It was like on 113th Street. And I think it's just called like Columbia Pizza because it was right by the university. Mm-hmm. And the slices were more expensive. I remember it was like $2 a slice back then. Okay, this is, again, 20 years ago. It was like $2 a slice, whereas like a normal size would be $1.50, right?
Mm.
But this is like a double size pizza, Nick. You know what I mean? It's like 12 inches long, like 8 inches wide. I don't know. It's probably bigger than that. It was a giant piece of pizza. And
is
this
it uber thin?
Like I mean,
paper
it's
paper sheet thin?
No, not paper sheet thin. But it, I mean, it's thin. It's New York pizza.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Then even if this pie is like 45 inches circumference, you could still polish off half of the pizza because it's so thin.
Well, it's thin, but it's got a lot of cheese on it. It's got 20 ounces of cheese on it.
Oh, nice.
Uh huh. See, nice. Yes, Dennis says thin enough you can fold it. New York pizza, you have to fold in half.
You gotta fold it.
Right, you eat it like a sandwich.
Yeah.
Zoe thought I was crazy because she grabbed the piece and she went to try to eat it. And, like, the front end droops down, of course, because it's such a large piece of pizza.
Right.
And it's got a lot of toppings, so it's top-heavy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And she's like, I can't eat this. Everything keeps falling off. And I'm like, it's a New York pizza. You need to fold it in half and eat it like a sandwich. She's like, that's stupid. I said, what do you mean that's stupid? That's how you eat it.
How did your wife eat the pizza in a segmented plate? Was it with a knife and fork, or did she have to cut it up into different to fit them into the segments? I know she doesn't listen to the podcast. That's why I said this.
Dennis said his wife is from Baltimore, and she eats pizza with a knife and fork. That's how I eat Chicago pizza.
Well, yeah, if it's thick, for sure.
Mm. Yes. Thick.
Chicago thin, you can still fold it. It's delightful that way.
True. Anyway, so I had to show Zoe how to eat this pizza because she had never had a pizza this large.
Yeah.
Right? She just used to like normal pizza. And it was delicious. It was quite literally. Like, everyone was like, oh my God, this pizza is just delightful.
Is Zoe converted over now?
I guess.
Has she given up on Papa John's? Now all she wants is Antonio Banderas?
Desperado pizza? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
But everyone loved it. In fact, my father-in-law texted me this morning that he – because he took one of the pies home. Let me tell you. So I only got three pies. Okay. Right. Three pies was way too much.
Really?
Yeah. So he took home the pepperonis and mushroom. I think there was like four slices left, so that's half a pie.
Mm.
And then we kept the other two, and I put them together because usually whatever's left over, I put it back in the box and stick it in the refrigerator. So I, not thinking how big this pizza was, I combined the two leftovers, the Florentine and the taco pizza, into one box.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to put it in the refrigerator. And I think when I combined them, I think there was like six slices left over, maybe seven. So between six of us, we only ate like a pie and a half.
What the hell? Where was Julian when you needed him?
So my father-in-law texted me this morning that he had leftover pizza, and it was just as good as yesterday when he just like microwaving it. My wife had two pieces of taco pizza today. Mm-hmm. I had three pieces of the Florentine pizza.
Mm.
Zoe had a piece of the Florentine pizza.
Nice.
And Reagan had a piece or two of the taco pizza. And I think there's still like two pieces left in there.
Dang.
So three pizzas fed six people for 2 days.
But there's no way that these three pizzas were price-wise the same price as a dumb Papa John's or Domino's.
Oh, no. It was $20 a pie. It was $60.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would guess about $18 a pie, $20 makes sense.
Yeah.
Where Domino's or Papa John's, you would have got three large for $20 probably. Yeah.
Dennis says this is getting Geek Brunch long. Listen, this will never be Geek Brunch long.
Never. Or maybe it will.
Well, maybe for $2.50.
Just wait, because we'll be recording that, I'm guessing, on a Friday.
Probably, yeah.
Long, yeah.
But I don't,
prep.
I don't know if it'll be 4.5 hours long.
No, good God, no.
But
no, unless you start your Kickstarter, and then we can talk about that for a while.
But why are you complaining? What else do you have to do on a Sunday evening? Nothing. That's why you're listening to this.
What is there, a WWE pay per view that he has to go watch? Does he have to go watch the 1982 Masters? What's going on? No. What else you got to do?
So we all eat our pizza, right? And and now the dogs need to go out.
Sure.
So I'm like, all right, I'll let the dogs out.
Snake.
Yes, I'll let the dogs out. So I go and I let the dogs out. I'm chilling on the porch. Listen, I'm laughing because Reagan's been playing that on all the Echoes. She just like she uses the house group, you know, because they're all connected to the house group. I have like a downstairs group, an upstairs group, a house group, and so she plays "Who Let the Dogs Out" on all the Echoes in the house.
Oh my!
Just
gosh.
As a joke. It's hilarious.
That's great.
So I let the dogs out. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's nice out. I'm gonna chill on the porch for a minute. So I'm just chilling on the porch. Mm-hmm. And I go back inside. Go to the bathroom again. I love, as you can tell, there's a theme here. I go to the bathroom a lot, and I come back out and we're chatting. And I was like, I'll let the dogs in. So I go outside and I call the dogs in, and I look over and I see this like large black thing, just like chilling on the enclosed patio. So The living room, there's a door. You go through the door. There's an enclosed patio. And then to the left of that, there's another door.
Well,
and there's
like a sunroom?
Yes. And then you go through the other door, and there's another deck, raised deck. And then the yards beyond that. So,
and it's inside two rooms.
It is inside the enclosed patio.
Holy
guacamole. Like on top.
Wow.
Like right by the screen.
Did you look like a Franzetta drawing of Conan battling a gigantic python? Is this the image that I should be?
Actually, my reaction is actually pretty funny. Well, to me.
Uh-oh.
You're going to be like, this guy. remember, I like to meditate a lot, right?
Yes.
And I'm working on my mindfulness a lot.
Did you get a fireball in your stomach and then you drew the fireball out of your stomach?
I
and then
shot the
like
fireball
a,
out of my
yes,
mouth.
Yes, like I a Street Fighter character.
Sean Duken! Yes.
Yes!
No, so I call the dogs in. I look and I see this long thing. And I was like, huh, that's weird. I don't remember that being there 5 minutes ago.
Holy Christ.
And so I go to the other – I walk out of the enclosed deck to go to the other deck because the dogs are not coming. So I go out there so they see me and they come running up. I let them in and I turn around to make sure that like I wasn't seeing anything. And I look and I was like, that thing's still there. What is that? So I get in closer and I realize it's a motherfucking snake.
Wow.
And I just stood there and I looked at it for a second. And my immediate thought, instead of, holy shit, there's a snake, was, oh man, that's so awesome. I'm mindfully observing the snake. I'm not freaking out. I'm living in the moment. You know what I mean? Like, that was my thought. Right? So I'm thinking to myself, okay, like, all this mindfulness work is actually working out. So I was like, eh, whatever, snake. Black snakes don't do anything. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like as far as I'm aware, at least in this part of the country, there are no venomous black snakes. So that might not
and
be true elsewhere.
And you said my anaconda don't want none if you
unless you got Bun-Ton. Mm-hmm. Mm, that could be a good episode title. So I go inside and I stop for a second, right? And because everyone's talking. And as soon as I was like, a second of silence. I was like, hey, so there's a snake out on the back porch. And everyone's like, what? Oh, my God. So, like, everyone runs up to go outside and, like, stare at the snake from, like, 10 feet away, right? And my like my mother-in-law's freaking out. My father-in-law starts telling a story of when they bought this new house that they moved into. He had gone into one of the sheds in the backyard and went to turn on the light. And like as he's moving his hand out, he brushed up on something. And so when the light came on, he looked and there's a snake just sticking out like 6 inches from the light switch.
What?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and like the rest of it just dangling down from the post where the light was hanging.
Whoa.
So like they're just talking, and I'm like, whatever, it's just a snake. So like
you're like, I'll be on the front porch. I gotta read.
Well, and then my wife's freaking out. She's like, we gotta get the snake out. And I'm like, the snake's fine. Like the snake's not gonna do anything. I'm sure the snake does not want to be there with you fucking staring at it. You know what I mean? So I was like, just leave the snake alone. It's just like they're out there for like 15 minutes, just like talking about the snake. And like Reagan gets a broom out there and like tries to move the snake. And like the snake's getting mad now. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because like the snake's just chilling and they're trying to move it. So I was like, well, just pick it up and put it in the backyard. And she's like, I'm not picking the snake up. I said, well, get the rake and just like move it, put it on the rake and just like toss it into the woods. And she's
does
like, no, don't do that.
Does the story end with now you're eating snake jerky?
Oh, man. I'll tell you, one of my thoughts was, should I kill the snake and cook it?
That's what I'm saying.
But I did not. I did not.
Okay.
I just wanted to leave the snake alone.
Yeah.
So like,
mindfulness.
They're not doing anything. They're just pissing the snake off. You know what I mean? Right. Or like bugging the shit out of it. So right. Finally they come inside. I was like, can you just go get the snake and throw it in the backyard? I was like, I guess. So I went out there and I became the snake whisperer. I got like pretty close to the snake and I was like, can you please just like go before they make me throw you into the backyard? And then I came back inside. She's like, did you get rid of the snake? I said, no, I told it to go away. And she's like, you did what? I said, yeah, I just told it to go away. But guess what? It worked because my wife went and made sure that the snake was leaving. She just like sat at the door to the back porch and watched the snake. And she's like narrating all of the snake's movements. And then, of course, Reagan joined there because they're like twins. Like narrating the snake going down back on the ground and like the snake moving. She's like, oh, my God, the snake's moving across. So the snake's going like the opposite direction of the door. And I'm like, she's just trying to find her way out.
Right.
So my wife opened this door. She's like, you need to go that way. And the snake just like moved around for a little bit, tried to climb up again, realized that wasn't the way out. So the snake turned around and went out and got to the door. She's like, oh, it's getting to the door. And so that's when I came out. And I was like, I'll make sure the snake leaves because I don't want it to like go out on the other porch, right?
Right.
And just like chill there because the cat wanted to go out. The dogs wanted to go back out. And like my wife's like, I'm freaking out. Like, I don't want the snake to bite Betty or bite the cat or like Ginger try to eat it. So I went out there and just like shushed the snake along and it found its way to the side of the deck and it went down. It was actually awesome watching it climb down because we have this like these posts on the side of the fence that have holes in them. And it's like slithering down these holes like in and out of them. So like you could actually see the snake coil all down the deck, and then just like it got onto the grass and it started going, and I started to take a picture or like a video, and I was gonna put it on Twitter, but my camera on that phone is shit, so I just like watched it go back into the woods. And nice. And then when it went back there, I came back inside. She's like, the snake gone? I said, yeah. She's like, did you kill it? I said, no, why would I kill it? I said, I just shushed it into the woods.
I told it to be quiet and it went into the woods.
Mm-hmm. So I think it was, I looked it up. It was a black racer. I know Dennis is asking what kind of snake it was. Black racer snake. Just like a garden snake, basically. It's about 4 foot long.
Wow.
I would say probably like 3 or 4 inches around. I mean, like I could have probably grabbed it with my hand, but sure. Yeah. Is it a Linux phone? As a matter of fact, Dennis, yes, it is.
Wow.
So that's the story of the delicious pizza and the snake.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one.
Yep. But that's it. That's all that happened. It was a very eventful day.
That sounds like it. You took over. I thought I had diarrhea of the mouth last episode. You won this one.
Yes. It happens sometimes.
It does.
Mm.
It does.
Am I out of tea? Man, what's in here?
Oh, no.
I think this is lemonade. Let's find out. Mm. Yep, lemonade.
Gotcha.
All right. Yes, that's good. I think we're going to wrap it up here, Nick.
Well, since Dennis has somewhere to go, we better end it right now.
Ah, good. You can see the chat. Yes. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the folks that were in the live chat. That was fun.
Yes.
If you want to join the live chat, then look out for my tweet next time we do it. Are we going to do this every episode? Maybe. I don't know.
Are we going to do video? Maybe. We don't know.
If we can figure that out.
Maybe.
We're not good with this technology stuff. Right. I've never used a computer in my life, so
right.
I don't know if I can figure it out. But
you just have to be mindful of it.
This is true. Mm-hmm. Thank you all for listening to the Nerdy Legion Snake Cast with Nick and Martin. Always fun chatting with you, Nicholas.
Always great.
Always fun. If you want to join us on YouTube for the live chat, we usually record Sundays and Wednesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern. So just be on the lookout for a tweet at Geekvine on Twitter. Nick is at Nick Wetmore, and the show is at Nerdy Legion. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.